Welcome back, everyone, to the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo and Joe Resinello.
Oh, you're exactly right, Joe.
We work for the man upstairs, as you do.
You're setting me up quite well. You just gave me an alley-oop.
The greatest revolutionary act you can commit right now is to open your mouth and speak the truth.
Whether you're an academic or you're a regular guy, we have to be fearless.
And once more, dear brothers and sisters, let us go into the breach. Welcome back, everyone, to the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, as always, joined by Joe Resinello. And once more, dear brothers and sisters, let us go into the breach on the Veritas Catholic Radio Network, 1350 on your AM dial, 103.9 on your FM dial, spreading the truth of the Catholic faith to the New York City metropolitan area. Two things, you know what I'm about to say. Download the Veritas app, share it with your friends. You'll have access to all of our station's content. You'll find every interview Joe and I have done on Veritas on the app. And also, if you like what Joe and I do, we get in a lot of trouble Thursday nights, 9 o'clock Eastern time on social media. So X, Facebook, YouTube, of course, until they take us down, which we're sure they will. And Rumble, please like, subscribe, share, do all that fun stuff. Joe and I love talking about movies. All right. We allude to movies in our show. So today we're very pleased and honored to be joined by Leo Severino. And he is the producer of Cabrini. And a lot of other things. And we're going to get into that because he is a Catholic filmmaker and we love what he's doing. We're going to get into, this film in particular, or probably talk about a couple of his other films. The movie Cabrini is released from Angel Studios Film, and we'll give you a lot more details on when it's going to be released and all that fun stuff. Just a quick bio. Leo Severino is a 20-year veteran in Hollywood and a founding partner of Metanoia Films. His producing and screenwriting debut was the acclaimed feature film Bella, which I'm sure a lot of you out there at Veritas have seen. His subsequent films include Little Boy, recently the wildly successful Sound of Freedom. Leo, I got to be honest, I couldn't wait to see that picture. I saw it, absolutely blown away. We'll talk about that a little bit. $14 million budget. The movie's approaching $300 million. $300 million is one of the most successful independent films in film history. And as we said, the soon-to-be-released Cabrini. Prior to producing, Severino spent 3 years as the director of business affairs for Fox Networks Group, a division of 20th Century Fox, in charge of their national programming, and a year as an associate at the Producers Guild of America, where he first experienced his passion for filmmaking. Leo received his Juris Doctorate degree with honors from the University of Southern California Law School and degrees in philosophy from the same institution as an undergraduate. Leo Severino, welcome to the front line with Joe and Joe, brother.
Man, that's a whole lot of words there, Joe Square.
Listen, we're like a couple of Chiacchieron Italians from North Jersey, so shut us up, man.
I'm a New Yorker at heart, man. I don't know how I wind up in L.A. because I'm a New Yorker at heart.
That's all right. Well, you're a movie maker, and you know it seems to be the way it is. But we'll talk about that too. I'm a movie guy, going way back in the day. I'm still officially a dues-paying member of the Screen Actors Guild, but that's a whole other show. But in the meantime, I'm going to throw it over to Joe. Leo, we're going to have a great conversation about Mother Cabrini and your film.
Leo, we always begin with a prayer. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, never was it known that anyone who sought your help, sought your intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, we fly unto you, a Virgin of Virgins, our Mother. To you we come, for you we stand, sinful and sorrowful. Mother, the Word incarnate, despise not our petitions, but in your clemency hear and answer us, Amen. Name of the Father.
Joe Resinello, if you don't mind, I want to start with a quick comment and get some comments from Leo, if that's okay.
Yeah, go.
Leo, here's the thing: I'm not beating up on Christian filmmakers, okay? Because I think anybody who's producing Christian films, we obviously should support them, especially given a lot of what, let's face it, what Hollywood produces. Your films are different. And what I mean by that is this: a lot of our evangelical brothers and sisters, they make movies. They, quite frankly, sometimes they're a little cookie cutter. They're very formulaic. And they're not, in our view, Joe and I, they're not very nitty gritty, like realistic. Bella, Little Boy, Sound of Freedom. All right. Cabrini. You're taking Christian and particularly Catholic filmmaking, which Joe and I really were so supportive of what you do, because the quality of your films And the fact that it's not just, you know, some cookie cutter story. These are stories that reflect real life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, but from a Catholic point of view. Am I off in my assessment of Christian filmmaking in general, you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on this in the sense that, you know, I don't like to cast aspersions. Like you said, getting any film made is basically a miracle. You know, thousands and thousands try, hardly any get actually completed, if not launched off the ground, and then very few actually make it to theatrical or other significant distributions. And, you know, there's audiences for all these sorts of things. From our perspective, you know, the word Catholic means universal. We're trying to make films that are universal in their nature, that are high art. Hopefully we're achieving that. Hopefully we're getting better and better. It's been the same team that's been together for all these films. And our mission was very clear, is to try to be a light in the darkness. And that light is not only, you know, the light of, on the moral, ethical, philosophical side of truth, but also on the side of artistic beauty. And I think the Catholic faith in particular has a long history of that. We've got some pretty high grade artists in our history, in our repertoire, from the Michelangelos to the Berninis to the Raphaels to so on and so forth. And even coming into film, you know, some of the greatest films, especially in the 40s and 50s, were either Catholic at heart or made by Catholic filmmakers. So we're trying to follow in that esteemed line. But yes, our goal is to not make a film that's going to be limiting or that's going to be preaching to a choir or anything like that. It's trying to make films that are universal in their content, are the highest level art and deal with real issues. So hopefully we're achieving a little bit of that.
Well, and that's, I think, really where I was going. You deal with real issues. You mentioned, let's say, prior to, let's say, the 1960s and filmmaking in Hollywood. Yeah, there many movies are distinctively Catholic. I mean, you take a movie like It's a Wonderful Life, and It's a Wonderful Life is not just everybody wearing halos. It's very, you know, in some points of the movie, it's a very dark movie. It's like, you know, this character going through these things. That's Catholic. And yeah, You're doing that. I watched Sound of Freedom, and I'm saying to myself, this is Catholic filmmaking, because you're not afraid, especially that subject. I mean, that's a difficult subject to tackle. And obviously it's a big issue going on right now. And you tackled it like Dick Buck is hitting a quarterback, man. It's like, man. And we really applaud you for that, because like I said, we want to see you and many other filmmakers do the same thing. And so, yeah.
Well, that one in particular was a tough one, but it's to the great credit of our director, Alejandro Monteverde. I mean, he just has an incredible vision. He's an artist. You mentioned It's a Wonderful Life. I believe he's the new Frank Capra. I really believe he's going to be one of the greatest directors, is the greatest director of our generation right now. And it's just a matter of being able to stretch our legs a little bit here, getting bigger budgets and that sort of thing, so that we can really start getting our vision onto the screen. But yeah, no, with Sound of Freedom, it was when Tim Ballard first came to us. I remember I was sitting in a little cafe in Pasadena, California. He pulled out his laptop and he showed us a map of the area where we were. And it was kind of a live updated map. And it showed that in a mile and a half square radius, I believe it was, from where we were sitting, there were 70 convicted pedophiles. 70. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, that's just who's convicted. That's not who's charged. That's not who's never been charged. That's not who's using. That's not who's distributing. And my jaw dropped. Our jaw dropped. And we just couldn't believe that the problem was as prolific as it is. It's as unimaginable it is as it is that it was so prevalent. And so we thought we got to do something. And Tim told us his story. And Alejandro at the time was already had on his heart to do something on trafficking. And so he was working on a different script. But Tim's story wound up being so much more incredible and than anything we could make up. So we thought, let's do it. Not knowing that it would ever get distribution. The film got tabled by everyone, passed by everyone. So it's unbelievable that it did what it did. And, you know, our goal was just to get awareness about this topic, that people, for people to know that it exists, that it's real, that it's prevalent, that it's as dangerous as we can imagine it is. You know, not to give an exhaustive look at the problem, but at least one particular true perspective that actually happened. And then it turned out doing incredibly well. And, you know, the biggest fruits of them so far have been to all kinds of different states and even countries passing stricter regulations for trafficking and funding to try to help fight the problem. So it's been a wonderful journey.
I'm going to hand it over to Joe, but Leo, one of the things that I know, you know, and where Joe and I are so pleased to see this, is that yes, your success the success in having that, you know, let's say, I guess $14 million would be considered a lower budget film and making that money. And yeah, it's great to make money, but we're happy because you're going to be able to make a lot more movies with a lot bigger budgets and just grow and grow and grow. Obviously, we know just from talking to you for 5 seconds that you know that everything is in God's hands. And it seems to us that he's blessing your work. So thank God. Joe Russinello.
Thank you.
Hey, let's jump into the film. I saw it. I liked it. I'll be honest with you. It's close to my heart. Both Joe and I, our families are from Italy. My father experienced prejudice coming to Newark, lost the Italian language. His father discouraged him from speaking Italian when he came. So it was close to my heart. I enjoyed it. Let's talk about the first scene. I thought it was powerful. Here you have a little boy. He's pushing his mother in a car through the city. The mother dies. No one cares. Now he's living on the streets. Talk about that. It gets your attention. It jumps right in. And I thought it was a pretty cool beginning of the film.
Yeah. I mean, when I was first approached by our executive producer, it was the same gentleman who funded our first film, Bella, and he wanted to make a film about Mother Cabrini. I said, Mother who? He's like, Cabrini. I was like, he's the first American saint. I was like, first American saint is St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. He's like, no, that's the first naturally born American saint. The first American, she became a citizen before she died, was Mother Cabrini. I was like, oh, interesting. Let's make a film about a 19th century nun that no one knows. Sounds like a great idea, Eustace. And he said, no, ye of little faith. And he sent me some books on her life. And when I started realizing the strength of the underdog story and what all that she accomplished and how no one knows her name, it was the same sort of feeling that with Sound of Freedom, we have to do something. But this is a long-winded way to answer your question. I have this stereotype about nuns in films and about, you know, we have this image in our head of like, they have rulers and they're like, you know, whatever, you know, that sort of thing. And so we really wanted to capture right off the bat the experience of what life was that she was entering into at that time, what she was experiencing. And that first scene, you know, without too many spoilers, our director wanted it to last farther longer. We ran out of runway for the kid to be running. He just wanted to be a kid running in a wheelbarrow with a panic to give the audience a sense this is a different sort of film you're watching, to break the stereotype. We're not just talking about a nun here. We're talking about a real situation of real kids that were really, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of kids at that time that were orphaned, that were abandoned, that were or in extreme poverty, starving, that sort of thing. So yes, the image of a little boy pushing his mom through the streets of New York City in a wheelbarrow until she dies is a pretty strong image.
I mean, to think about that, though, to put yourself in the child's place. You see, Americans, we have poverty here, and it's real, and I'm not undercutting it, but not like that. I've seen poverty like that in the third world. Children living at train stations. John Bosco took care of people like that in Turin, Italy. I mean, it's hard to navigate this world, but to be alone at 11 on the street to live is haunting, actually. Yeah. And no one cared. You see, like, no one cared. This is how we will be judged. I am convinced of this. Convinced. When Christ returns, the power structures are flipping. They're flipping. And how one, and in the movie, you know, I'm not bad mathing the Irish. I love the Irish, but they have a theme in this film, and we're going to talk about that. They're Catholic. How many of us just ignore blatant injustices? You made a film up, you know, about children trafficking. That's happening. That's real. How many people attacked you in the press? Bad mouth you, called you this, psyop, blah, 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 blah. They know damn well what's going on. They know that this is about political power while they've opened up the border. They don't care. They don't care that kids are being trafficked. Who cares? Same thing with this kid. Who cares that his mother's going to die? Who cares that he's going to starve? Who cares that he has no one to take care of him?
Your Mother thoughts? Cabrini.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, Other Joe. I'm going to call you guys Joe and Other Joe, okay?
That's
okay.
All fine. Good.
I'll just switch back and forth. Whichever one of you is I'm talking to, the other one's the Other Joe. Is that all right?
That's all good.
Totally fine.
I'm kidding. No, Mother Cabrini cared. You know, there was – she's the sort of person that if she was, you know, alive today and was driving and it was raining and there was a family in the rain, she couldn't sleep knowing that they were out there in the rain. She'd have to figure it out, have to do something to get it done. And it wasn't, she never said, go to the government for any handout. She taught the kids from an early age self-independence and self-sufficiency. She thought that was the best way to maintain their dignity. But you're exactly right. I mean, we can't bash on the Irish Catholics because they felt they experienced the same thing. They just happened to be a generation before the Italians. And so it's reasonable. There's a dynamic in the film where the Irish have kind of settled, and they've kind of, they're building St. Patrick's Cathedral at the time in New York City. They're kind of in with the government. And it was a tough situation because now the Italians come in and the Irish were like, you know, you guys got to pay your lumps like we did. You can't expect that you're going to jump right in. Because at that time it was very much based on race, class, religion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, at some level it's understandable, but Mother Cabrini cut through all that nonsense. She's like, we're talking about humans. We're talking about children here, talking about people that are starving. We're talking about people who have no dignity. Let's ignore all the politics. Let's ignore all this other nonsense. And let's just deal with the human immediately in front of us and give them a sense of dignity.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe, Leo Severino's joining us, the new film coming out that he is the producer of, Cabrini. Leo, when's it coming out?
March 8th. March 8th is going to be in theaters nationwide. The same distributors that did Sound of Freedom when no one else would and then absolutely crushed it, the Harmon Brothers at Angel Studios. They're also known for The Chosen. They're distributing Mother Cabrini. It's going to be their first global release, so we're going worldwide with it.
You know what I love about what you're doing is the fact that, yes, and you've alluded to it a couple of times, how this script was table, nobody wanted to see it. Distributors don't want to go near. It reminds me of The Passion of the Christ and what Mel Gibson went through. Hollywood, quite frankly, doesn't want these films produced. Joe and I believe that, okay? And what you're doing, and somebody like, you know, a group like Angel Studios is saying, well, these are the movies we want to produce. And from a business point of view, it's smart because I don't want to see the trash. I don't watch movies anymore. Leo, I grew up on movies, okay? I mean hardcore. I saw everything growing up, okay? I don't go to the movies anymore. I can't tell you the last time I was actually sitting in a theater because I don't like what they produce, but I like what you produce. Let's talk for a second, Leo, about trust. You mentioned nuns, right? Joe and I are very close. Joe's close to the Missionaries of Charity. We're both close to the Sisters of Life, Franciscan Sisters of the Renewal. These are women, and I'm going to get to Mother Cabrini here. These are women who have a radical trust in Jesus Christ, a radical trust. They talk about getting into rolling up the sleeves and getting into the dirt. They're in Harlem. The mother, obviously, the Missionaries of Charity are in India. Sisters of Life are getting mocked all the time in front of Planned Parenthoods all throughout the country. Okay. These are women who completely trust in God. Now, Mother Cabrini, she actually had a real problem. She almost drowned, if I remember correctly. Okay. She had a tremendous fear of water, quite frankly. Yet she went across the Atlantic Ocean. I don't even know how many times. All right. 12 times. Now, the reason why I bring that up is talk about the trust, because she had to overcome, I would think, a deep fear that she had from nearly drowning. Okay. Yep. And she did that. And that's just I'm using that, Leo, as an example of that radical trust that Mother Cabrini had and many other religious sisters have. Talk about that. The fact that we should trust more as men and as lay people, we should have the trust in God that they do.
I mean, all the nuns you mentioned, they're all incredible examples, near and dear to our hearts. You know, Sister for Life, we're actually at one of our screenings along with the Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, who are amazing. But yes, Mother Cabrini, the rabbit hole of trust goes very, very, very deep. Right? When she was very young, she got smallpox, almost died. And then she got tuberculosis, almost died, and it compromised her immune system. It compromised her lung capacity. It was reduced to, I think, something like 20%. And then she almost drowned. According to her account, she actually did drown. She had no more breath left. She was done. And then kind of the hand of God came. A farmer was providentially walking by and pulled her out of the water. After that, she was given a year to live, and she was 12 years old at the time. And for years after that, she was only given a year to live. it was repeatedly, you know, you can't go on like this. You're going to die. You only have a year to live. And instead of taking that as kind of a death sentence and resigning herself, she trusted in Providence and used it as a motivation. Her one of her big mottos was, and it's in the film, it's a line where she said, every morning she would wake up and realize she can serve her weakness or she can serve her purpose. She can't do both. And she said, she decides every day, I'm going to serve my purpose. So she used it as a motivation. If I only have a year left, well, then I better get to work. I better do as much good as I can in this year that I have in front of me. So she was facing this interior specter of death, of her mortality, every single morning that she would wake up could have been her last. And what an incredible way to live, because she milked it without giving too much of a spoiler. She lived a very long life and she defied all the odds. And she was so inspiring. In fact, if your audience doesn't know much about her, you know, at a time when there was millions of these Italian immigrants and other immigrants crammed into 5 points in southern Manhattan, living in these terrible tenements, she came in without speaking the language, without any funds whatsoever, and wound up lifting up so many people out of poverty, building orphanages, hospitals, schools, help centers, not only here, throughout the entire world, right? And she did it, like you said, having this fear of water, crossing the ocean. She was an incredible businesswoman. Her empire of hope was larger than anything the Vanderbilts or the Rockefellers had built. And she did it. All these places were led by women, right? She was the first missionary order of women, of nuns, that was not under the auspices or the authority of some order of priests. She did it completely on her own. And that was to the great credit to Pope Leo XIII. One final thing, you mentioned the missionaries of charity. In 1946, Mother Cabrini was canonized. At her canonization was a young nun from an order called the Loreto Nuns, which was a teaching order. She was so inspired by Mother Cabrini that a few months later, she asked to leave her order to start her own order in the mold of Mother Cabrini. Of course, that nun was Mother Teresa.
Yeah. Leo Severino joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe, producer of Cabrini. I'm going to tell everybody out there at the Veritas Catholic Radio Network, in America, we waste our money on garbage with HBO. And Leo, I'm not going to try to get you in trouble. We know you're a Hollywood guy and all that. But the bottom line is this. A lot of the things that come out of there and, you know, mainstream Hollywood are not exactly Catholic friendly. Let's support and go see Cabrini. Let's support this film so that Leo and his group, they could produce a lot more films like Cabrini and keep it moving. Joe Racinello, where do you want to go?
I want to expand a little bit on the fact that she had her lungs compromised, because in the film, it haunted her. You guys would like kind of go through the movie and show a scene. Many times God uses things like that. One of the themes of our show is get out of the boat. We have to get out of the boat and trust radically. But many times God uses people like that who are compromised to show his glory, where you would look at something like that, as the Pope did in the film. And he says, how are you going to do this? You, how are you? And she's just like, no, no, no. We don't serve our weakness. We serve our purpose. We all can do that. We're just afraid. We're afraid. She wasn't afraid, but God kind of set the stage and she stepped out. And we have to step out. Talk about that, because in a lot of ways, you're doing that. I can remember, you may not remember, when you guys did Bella, did you speak at the Catholic Underground in New York City maybe like 15 years ago?
I did, yeah, at the CFRs.
I was there. Heard you speak there. I also, as Providence would have it, I was an auditor. I was on, I think the cathedral in LA is Grand Avenue. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
I was at the old hotel where the Oscars, I was staying there. It's an old Hollywood hotel. I was staying there. I had to go to the bathroom. I was going to dinner. This is no lie. And as I'm going to the bathroom, Eduardo Vasquez was doing an interview. And I know when he did Bella, because I'm close with the CFRs, that he stayed with them. So he's doing an interview in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. I don't even speak English, Leo. I'm from New Jersey, but that's another conversation. I see him talking. And to be honest with you, I kind of interrupted the interview. I said, I know you. You are involved with the CFRs. He stops the interview, comes over to me. He's like, hey, brother, starts talking to me. I was just like, that is crazy. Like, it was like craziest thing in the world. But that's what you guys are doing. Wow. You're out of the boat. We got to get out of the boat, out of the boat. And that's where the fruit is. That's what she did. And we could do the same thing. We're just afraid. We hold on to our little crumb. Like in this world, that's where nothing gets done. Talk about that, because that's what you guys are doing. I'm trying to do it too, to be honest with you. I'm doing my best.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Look, you're standing in front of a sign that says the front line with Joe and Joe. Right? That's pretty much as when the front line is pretty much outside of the boat as you can get. So bless you for what you guys are doing. Now, we can't take credit for this stuff, right? Like you said in the beginning, it's God's work, and we just have to try to cooperate it. But yes, it was a daunting task when Eduardo Verástegui, Alejandro Monteverde, and myself, when we first met up, we had this crazy idea of let's all step out of our boats. I mean, the biggest boat was Eduardo. I mean, he's a massive success, so famous in Mexico. I remember going with him the first time to Mexico, and at the airport, all these women are lined up and waiting for him. You know, they somehow knew that he was going to arrive, and they, you know, mobbed him like he was part of a boy band, which he was in Mexico. And then Alejandro the same. He was this coveted director, had broken the record for film festival wins as a student at the University of Texas Film School. So he had all these offers from Hollywood, and I was working at 20th Century Fox. So each one of us were in a kind of our own little boat. And it was Eduardo who really was the driving force. Him and I met at Mass on a Wednesday. We were the only two kind of younger guys there at the time. And we got to talking, and he basically said, he used the boat analogy. He said, I want to take my faith seriously. I don't know how to do that, but I feel like I'm swimming in the ocean by myself with a bunch of sharks. He's like, maybe I can, with a little knife, maybe I can stab one or another, but they're going to swallow me. You know, can you come and let's build a submarine? And I said, all right, you're persuasive. Let's do it. But yes, it's been a long time for us to be able to be in a position where we can hopefully start impacting culture in a serious way. I mean, we've tried in our own way, but you leave the fruits to God. But that's our hope, is to try to make films that are going to be a light in that darkness.
No, absolutely. Leo Severino is joining us here at the front line with Joe and Joe, producer of the new film coming out on March 8th, Cabrini. Leo, we're going to take a quick break here at the Veritas Catholic Radio Network for about just a few minutes. But where can our audience really just follow what's going on with Cabrini, whether it's social media, website, what do you got?
Yes, at Angel Studios, right? Angel.com/Cabrini. And like the first Joe said, you know, these are the sorts of films that if you feel inspired and, you know, it's one thing to hate everything that's coming out of Hollywood, you know, not everything, but, you know, hate a lot of what's coming out of Hollywood. All right. It's another thing to try to do something about it. We're trying to do something about it. And I mean, hopefully we'll leave it to the audience to gauge whether our films are of the artistic level that's worth supporting. But if they are, then please support them. There's as many, we're still not with, you know, Disney or Sony. We're competing with gargantuan films, right? March 1st, Dune is released. March 8th, Kung Fu Panda is released. I think we need another Kung Fu Panda. Everyone's on the edge of their seats for that one. They're massive films. They're massive films. And so in order to compete, we're going to really need people's support to buy tickets so that we can stay in theaters. Because the real point of this film is to make this wonderful saint, this wonderful woman known throughout the world. Absolutely. That's why, by the way, one final thing before you go to break is, we did the film as a nonprofit. So all the proceeds of the films are going to organizations like the Missionaries of Charity and others that help the poorest of the poor, orphanages and that sort of thing. So none of the filmmakers, the director, myself, none of us are profiting on this film. It's entirely a non-for-profit venture. So
that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Stick around here at the front line with Joe and Joe. We have another great segment with Leo Severino. We'll be right back.
Catholic radio works, and now we have it here in Connecticut and New York. It's been seen around the country that there's no better tool for evangelization. Where there's Catholic radio, the folks who listen deepen their faith, families are strengthened, parishes and communities flourish. So, let people know you're listening to Veritas, tell your friends to tune in, and let's make an impact here for Jesus and His church. This is Steve Lee for Veritas Catholic Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Frontline with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, Joe Rasinello. We're way in the breach with Leo Severino, producer of the new movie coming out on March 8th about Mother Cabrini, titled Cabrini. Joe Rasinello, where do you want to go?
I want to talk about the relationship between Mother and the prostitute in the film. I believe her name was Victoria. I thought it was very interesting. Couple things. One, sometimes people who are living a very pious life, obviously Mother Cabrini, she's a nun, she's in a state of grace. We separate from people like that. We're not supposed to. We're supposed to embrace them. We're supposed to love them. And they developed a sincere friendship. They were friends. I like that. I really thought that was very unique. Also, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, there's an event that takes place. Obviously, she didn't live the greatest of lives. Her name, again, Victoria. And she says to Mother, she's like, there's not enough water on this earth to wash me clean. I thought that was powerful because I think a lot of people feel that way. Listen, we're in the world. Not everyone lives a great life. We all make mistakes. And sometimes we're hesitant to want to go to confession. We feel that there's no way that God could forgive us. Say we did something really bad. And we've all, to some degree or another, have. Let's be honest. I have. I'll be honest. We shouldn't feel that way, ever. And God can take the worst life and turn it around. In fact, he has. Talk about that relationship. Talk about that statement. I think it's something that people should really pay attention to, and they should believe it.
Deep stuff. I love it, Joe. It reminds me, have you guys ever heard of Father Chad Ripperger?
Sure.
Yeah. So Father Rip, there was one thing that he said, which has stuck with me for forever, was when anyone's thinking that that their sins can't be forgiven by God, they're actually thinking that they're greater than God. That my sin is so big that even God himself can't take care of this, right? So he's like, it's not that you're thinking too little of yourself, you're thinking too much of yourself. Get out of the way. Just let him do his work. Trust he's going to handle it. Doesn't matter what you've done. He's bigger than all that, right? And when it comes to this relationship with Mother Cabrini and Victoria, it's actually based on true events. The first night that they arrived in New York, the priest that was supposed to pick them up did not arrive to pick them up. There was a bit of an antagonism against Mother Cabrini showing up on the shores. I think the priest felt a little bit judged, as if he wasn't doing his job, which he wasn't. And so she wound up staying at a place that doubled as a brothel. And so from there, we developed this storyline. Imagine she befriended people that were there, and there's this great relationship with this character, Victoria, who's a prostitute. And that first night, as they're walking, they run into her. And if you remember the scene, Joe, Mother Cabrini tells her, we need a place to stay. Now, at this point, we already know Mother Cabrini has built orphanages all throughout Europe, has gone straight to the Pope and basically demanded that he give her this mission because it was a calling from God. She's not timid. She can make things happen. So the direction that the director gave in that line, in that scene, and this is relevant to your question, is Mother Cabrini doesn't need anybody to find a place to stay. She can make it happen. The reason she saw that this was a woman who was in need, who was a prostitute, the reason she asked her wasn't for Mother Cabrini and for the nuns. It was for her. What greater way to give someone dignity than saying, I need your help. You help me. It cost her to kind of, like you were talking, step outside the boat. And that little seed of just that little spark of dignity, you are in a higher position than I am. I need your help, is what opened up the doors for then this prostitute to develop this relationship and eventually leave her ways and help the orphanage. So that's sort of thinking that we got straight from the writings of Mother Cabrini. She mentioned, and Mother Teresa was that way as well. Didn't matter how destitute, how poor you were, you have something to offer. And that's a way to give back people their dignity when they feel they don't have any.
Leo Severino joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe. Leo, let me ask you a question. I want to stay on this for a second, because one of the things Joe and I talk a lot about on the show is abortion. And Joe and I are of the view that many, many women in particular are like Victoria. Okay. They probably have had an abortion. This is not Joe and Joe being judgmental. Just, I'm making a point here about forgiveness. I think that that's the case with so many women who, let's say, for argument's sake, are on the wrong side of that issue. is that they've had abortions, and I don't think that they feel like they could be forgiven. And I think it's up to guys like us and many, many other people to let people know, because part of what you're doing, I would venture to say that a great part of what you're doing, I know what Joe and I are doing, is evangelization. We want to bring people into the church. Part of that is to emphasize the love and forgiveness and mercy of Jesus Christ. And I think that that's what causes a lot of problems, like you said, is people think they're bigger than God. They think that their sins can't be washed away. And unfortunately, not just with abortion, but with many other sins, people fall deeper and deeper into them, because then they begin not only to despair, but then embrace their sin. I think this is an important message to get out to a lot of people, is what you guys were just talking about. Maybe you could expand on it a little more to say, hold it. The God that the Catholic Church teaches is the real God is one of love. Jesus Christ came to redeem us and forgive us of our sins. Talk about the real need, particularly in the culture war, because a lot of these people are wounded and broken. Joe, I'm sure you've seen them. Joe has seen them. I have seen them yelling, screaming in front of abortion clinics, mocking, spitting, and all that stuff. A lot of these people are not hateful people. They're just broken and wounded, and they need Jesus. You know where I think you know where I'm going with this, Leo. Let me throw it over to you for a comment.
Well, I think it has to start with each one of us here at this podcast, right? So everyone is broken at some level, and everyone has hurts and has either a past of things that they're not very proud of, or of strife or wounds in their heart. Everyone can use healing. And Mother Cabrini has a quote that the world is broken, but the only thing that can mend it is love. And I think that's true for anybody in any situation, right? All of us have inherited this fallen nature. If there was something I remember reading once about Our Lady, who's known as Our Lady of Sorrows, obviously, because of what she suffered. You know, she had the specter of believing the prophecies, knowing that her child eventually was going to die, and then had to witness her son, you know, scourged and stripped naked and crucified as a criminal, right? But there was something, I think it's in the writing of one of the saints, that said that although she was a lady of sorrows, and although she suffered much, she was never wounded, because the wounds come from resistance. It's the strength of the skin and the knife that causes the wound, right? But if, you know, these curtains behind me, if there's nothing behind it, I'm punching the curtain, I'm not going to do anything to it, no matter how hard I punch it, right? Because there's no resistance. And that, I think, was Our Lady to the T. She just accepted the will of God as good, as that there, no matter how deep the sorrow, there is something redemptive in that sorrow, and there's something good. In the case of her son, obviously, it's for everyone. Anyways, long-winded way of saying, going back to your original point, it's that trusting that no matter where we are, no matter what we've done, that there's always hope.
Yeah, Leo, and thank you so much for expanding on that. And the reason why I even brought up, and I'm going to hand it over to Joe, is because I think Catholic men in particular really get a bad rap, not surprisingly, from the culture. All right. And I want people to know that from our hearts, that no, don't believe the culture, because in our view, if Catholic men acted the way you just described, the way Joe was alluding to earlier, we changed this country like that. We changed the world in the snap of a finger. And that's one of the things we're trying to do here at the front line with Joe and Joe. So thank you so much for expanding on that. Oh, I'm mentioning, by the way, Our Lady of Sorrows, my wife, who is notorious for finding novenas and devotions and everything, just before Lent, found the prayer of Our Lady of Sorrows. And we've been praying it every night. So that's an awesome devotion. Joe Racinello.
I want to talk about how she raised money in the city. The Archbishop said she could only solicit from Italians. Italians didn't have any money. And she's like, fine. And she thought of creative ways and she raised funds. Saints don't always stay within the lines. If you look at the history of saints and you read about saints, Ignatius Loyola, Francis, you mentioned Mother Teresa. Now we're talking about Cabrini. They take what they got, and then they don't wait for other people. Too many people are waiting for somebody. We have a PowerPoint presentation. We have to go through, have committee meetings. No, they roll up their sleeves and they get it done. I remember, and I'll just share the story, and I want to comment on this. I remember when before I was married, I used to be the driver for the Missionaries of Charity. And I was coming through the Lincoln Tunnel, and there were these people who would collect cans right outside the Lincoln Tunnel on 30th Street. And I would make the left on the West Side Highway and drive down to the village to the sisters. And I would tell them, I'm like, there's a whole community of people living and collecting cans. They live there. They're like, let's go. Get in the car, sandwiches, lemonade, let's go. That's what saints do. Let's go. We don't make a PowerPoint presentation. I don't need a PowerPoint presentation. I don't need to have a committee. I don't need any of that. Let's go. That's what Cabrini did. She's like, okay, you got to solicit from Italians. They have no money. That's fine. We'll make it happen. That's what the church has to do. That's what Jesus did. That's what Jesus did. Talk about that, because Cabrini did that. Talk about how she solicited the money, but talk about that in general from the saints' perspective, because that's what saints do. That's what we got to do.
Well, I don't know much about the saints' perspectives other than what I've read, obviously. But yes, you're exactly right. There's that. There's a certain shrewdness, which we think of shrewdness as cunning, as a vice, but actually St. Thomas lists it as a virtue under prudence. It's to quickly achieve the good. They always found a way to quickly achieve the good. And why quickly? Because there's no time, right? You don't want to give evil and darkness a second. And that requires, shrewdness requires a certain prudence, a certain understanding, a certain wisdom. I'm reminded of when they gave our Lord when they asked him if we should pay the tax to Caesar or to Rome, right? And it put him in this quandary, right? Because, well, are you saying that that tax is greater than the temple tax? Are you saying that, you know, is that conundrum of do you serve God or you serve country sort of thing? And of course, we know his answer, right? Whose image is on the coin? Give to Caesar's what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. It's that same sort of wisdom that you see in the examples of saints like Mother Cabrini, right? So she was never going to disobey a non-sinful order of anybody, of a bishop or anybody in her chain of command, right? So he says, don't solicit for funds. She didn't. She did. She just went to New York Times and said, hey, New York Times, come check out what's happening in Five Points. And they did. And this is a true story. There was an article. It was in New York Sun Times at the time. And the article came up, and then people just started sending her money. So she never solicited, but the money came, right? Those are the sorts of that sort of incredible shrewdness that you see in the wisdom of the saints.
Leo Severino, let me ask you this. Saints are obviously known for miracles, okay? So now correct me if I'm wrong. I went to Denver about 3 years ago. There is a shrine to Mother Cabrini outside of Denver, all right? My understanding there is that there was no water. And somehow, some way, Mother Cabrini found water and was able to establish the shrine. And I believe she did the same thing in New York City. Talk about that, because to me, it's like, all right, it's kind of like plain to see. There's no water here. What are we going to do? And she's like, it's okay. Look, give me a few minutes. I'm going to go pray. We're going to find some water. Talk about that, Leo.
Yeah, it was West Park, Uptown Manhattan. The place is still there and the water's still flowing. The Jesuits had this place and they had 300 men and they dug all these wells and they couldn't find any water. So it was kind of destitute. And they were trying to force Mother Cabrini out of Manhattan at the time. And because she was causing all kinds of problems. And the problems were unintended. She was just trying to get people the dignity and the food and the supplies that they needed. But in so doing, she had rubbed a lot of people the wrong way because they saw it as, you know, the Italians trying to crouch into areas where they don't belong sort of thing. And so there was this land and it was completely dry. And they were using a bucket brigade from the Hudson River to try to get water up. And when Mother Cabrini saw it, she's like, I'll buy this. I'll buy this land. And like, it's pretty much worthless. She's like, oh, I'll buy it. Don't worry. She bought it. And then she told the nuns, dig right there. And where she pointed, there was water. It was miraculous, and by the way, so outside of the box that we didn't even put that in the film because we thought, oh man, people are gonna think we're trying to exaggerate what Mother Cabrini did, you know. So
no,
there's a reference to it in the film, shall we say.
It's amazing when you think about it, because again, alongside of the trust we're talking about, getting out of the boat and everything else, the other thing is, again, that's a matter also of a radical trust in God. Go over there, go dig a well, because you're going to find water. Did the same thing, like I said, you know, outside of Denver. I was there 3 years ago. Same thing. There's no water there. All right, we'll find some. Boom. Drop a well. Boom, you got water, and now you have a shrine. And that speaks to that trust. Leo Severino is joining us here at the front line with Joe and Joe. We're talking about Mother Cabrini because that is his new film that he has produced through Angel Studios is the distributor. Is that correct, Leo?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Leo is the producer of the film. We encourage everyone to go and support this film. And by the way, if you haven't seen Bella, if you haven't seen Little Boy, if you haven't seen Sound of Freedom, go and get those too. I'm sure you could find them streaming somewhere, or Leo will tell us where we can find those also. Go ahead, Leo.
They're on Netflix and Amazon. But yeah, I want to give particular praise to Angel Studios for believing in us. These guys are just wonderful. They get the audience. They get that there's people that are hungry for films that amplify light, films that aren't glorifying violence or sex or nudity or any of that stuff that's coming out of Hollywood. Films that are generally good for a broader audience that includes children, which kind of just makes sense. You expand the audience to the entire family, then financially it makes sense, but then by way of your reach, it makes sense as well. And I think this film, rated PG-13, is about right, don't you think, guys? Because it deals with some dark stuff that Mother Cabrini was facing. But yes, Angel has been just wonderful. So go to angel.com /Cabrini for tickets.
Absolutely. Joe Russinella.
I want to talk about Mother Cabrini as a fearless person, another common theme with saints. She was fearless. And I have seen this actually with nuns, missionaries of charity. Fearless, walk into projects. I can remember being in San Francisco at a soup kitchen down by the Embarcadero at an old firehouse. The motley crew that was waiting to eat, they just opened the door, say a St. Michael prayer, open the door. They just come in like you're like, oh my gosh, these people are going to kill us. Fearless. God works in that space. I've learned this in my own little life. I'm a father of five. God works in that space. We're afraid to go in the space. But that's what saints do. She did that. She lived. You mentioned the brothel. She slept. Who does that? Who does that? Nobody does that. Talk about how the devil uses fear. He uses fear because he knows that if we don't step through, nothing's going to get done. Talk about Mother Cabrini as far as her being fearless. Talk about the need to be fearless and step in that space. Because when we step in that space, that's where the fruit is.
Yeah. Well, in her case, it was that drive for this greater purpose, right? The greater purpose of reaching those that she described as those that felt they had no dignity. And so there was no length that she wouldn't go. Like we mentioned, she was afraid of her own death. She actually writes it. You know, we would think of most saints to be like, it certainly is true that many saints were like this. I don't fear death. I'm just going to embrace God. Mother Cabrini wasn't like, she was more confessional about it. She's like, no, I'm afraid of death. I'm afraid that I'm going to die because I feel like I have so much more work to do. So I'm going to do everything I can to get that work done. She was afraid of crossing the ocean because she was afraid of water. In 5 points, literally she was told there are areas you cannot go. You should not go. You know, that area was made famous by Martin Scorsese and Gangs of New York because it was these violent gang fights that were happening. There was kids that were living kind of in the sewers, in the underground underneath 5 points that even cops wouldn't go to, right? She let none of that stop her. None of it stopped her. Fear is this perceived evil that can't be overcome. And she either thought it can be overcome or it's not an evil. There's a good there, right? There's a child there who needs help. So I need to get there. Or there's, you know, someone who I need to, to reach, to share some light and some hope. So she never let any of those things. And as far as I could tell, in all of her writings and in her trial of her canonization, even if she felt this thing, it was so far in the background to her mission, which was really in front of her. She has a quote, "The world is too small for what I intend to do." Right? Now, when you first read that, you might think, wow, that's someone who thinks a lot of themselves. They think they're going to change the entire world. Well, in her case, not only was it the case, in her lifetime, she touched hundreds of thousands and within a generation, millions of people. But hopefully our film, she didn't say the world's too small for what I intend to do while I'm alive. Right. And as we believe in eternal life, we believe her mission is still continuing. And hopefully this film is an extension of that work.
I want to touch on something you said, because you said she was driven. And in the film, some people misunderstood this the way I saw it as ambition. They said, "That's you're ambitious." No, I don't think she was ambitious. She was doing God's will. God's will. It's not about like a title or I did this. God doesn't look through that lens, nor do saints. Like that to me is a very secular analysis. I'm not doing this to get an accolade. I'm not doing this for another building. I'm doing this because it's God's will and I'm all in. There is no worldly ambition here. Nothing. I talk about that because that was many people, even people with "you're too ambitious." No, I'm not ambitious. I'm doing God's work.
She's like, don't limit God's plan. All right. That's what she was saying. It isn't about ambition. You know, she lived a life of poverty. She lived the life of as a missionary, just going from place to place. She had often no place to lie her head. She would establish an institution, say a hospital, in 120 days, write down all the instructions for every division and how it's all going to be run, would leave a couple nuns and she would leave and sometimes not even come back. All right, so it wasn't like she would sit back and look at the beauty of the work that was being done or that she was gaining any financial or any worldly stature. She didn't know she was going to be canonized. You know, she had no notion of this sort of stuff that people would know her name. She just did what she thought was right. She wasn't ambitious. She was a realist.
Yeah, and the other thing too about ambition is I'll put it like this to you, just to tell you, Joe and I are ambitious. We're ambitious to fulfill what God wants us to do. Now, I think, Leo, you know us for a short time now. You know we're a couple of big-mouth Italians from North Jersey. But God is using that. And yeah, there is a level of ambition to say, okay, if God has a greater purpose for, let's say, the front line with Joe and Joe, or for everything that you're doing, well, yeah, then I am ambitious. I am ambitious to fulfill God's will.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes the ambition gets confused with greed or selfishness. You know where I'm going with that. And I think we ought to say I could change the world. That's an ambitious statement.
No, I think we meant ambitious in the sense of, like you said, avarice or vainglory, you know, looking for ourselves or that sort of thing. No, we want to make the biggest, broadest films in the history of filmmaking. Our next film, we believe, is going to be one of the greatest films ever made. And we better think that, right? Because if not, why are we making it? Why aren't we going and reaching for the highest level? Your podcast, right? Whatever you guys are going to be doing with it, I know you guys are going to strive for the highest level. Of course we should. That's how we started this conversation, because it's first using our talents the way God has intended, to the maximum of their potential, to the perfection of whatever it is that we can possibly do. And second, it's not only for us, we all got it. Right. If God has given us a particular talent and he's opened the doors to go through it, why not go through it at the highest level? It just doesn't make any sense. Is the good not worth it? Is beauty not worth it? Now, that's presuming we're doing something that's good and true and beautiful. If we're not, then let's pray it fails. Right. But if we're trying to strive to the best of our abilities, to the height of what is good and what is true and what is beautiful, absolutely. Let's go for it all.
Leo, you might get mad at me. I hope you don't. Okay. Can you give us a little inside track on what the topic of the next film is going to be?
Oh, I'm so upset at you right now. I can't even believe it. not in the slightest. If there's any ambition in the truest sense of the word, here's the ambitious project. We want to make a film about Our Lady. That's what we're trying to do. And we've been working on it for 12 years. We're working on it before Sound of Freedom came, and we felt that was the right thing to do. We're working on it before Cabrini came, and we felt that was the right thing to do. And now looking back, we think Cabrini has given us kind of the artistic practice necessary to try to reach a higher level of art. And Sound of Freedom has given us a certain success and credibility, where now even all the Hollywood studios are trying to communicate with us. We're like, we're good. Thank you so much. We're with Angel. But yes, it's going to be a film that's going to center around the slaughter of the innocents and the escape from Jerusalem to Egypt, because although it's not strictly in the scriptures, there's been plenty of mystic saints that have had visions as to how all that went down. And we feel that's an incredibly strong story, right? This tyrant who rationally, from the purely, you know, non-faith perspective, had a claim to the Davidic throne, right? He rebuilt the temple, which only Solomon, the son of David, had done. He was recognized as a king within the Empire of Rome. They didn't recognize anybody as a king, right? So he had this notion that I am the Messiah. I am what's good for Israel. My kingdom is threatened by the birth of the child. I'm going to do whatever I can to eliminate that threat. And the only thing that's in his way is Saint Joseph and Our Lady. And Our Lady is the center of the story because, you know, as you guys know, maybe in your background and watching and being involved in the media and watching films, is you have to build a character that is relatable. And often that starts with some sort of flaw, some sort of relatable characteristic that then the character overcomes in kind of this hero's journey, right? That's kind of the normal story. Now you're talking about Our Lady, right? Who just grew from grace to grace, from perfection to perfection. How are you going to build that story? Well, we stumbled upon something, and that is it's that part in the scriptures where it says that Jesus grew in grace and wisdom. And the church fathers and the theologians talk about how he grew in this manifestation of this excellence, in the manifestation to the world. It's one thing to know the essence of ice cream perfectly down to every single, you know, electron. It's another thing to have taste buds and taste the ice cream, right? And so it's that experiential knowledge that he grew in. And it is human nature experience. But anyways, with our Lady, the thought is, the story is we need to leave Jerusalem to get to Egypt to save the life of the child. The journey and the arc is the end of the film, where it's a realization we need to leave Egypt to go back to Jerusalem so that the child can die. It's the everything contrary to a motherly instinct to protect is what she was called to offer.
Leo, we have to leave it there. Unfortunately, brother, we could talk to you for hours. We thank you so much. Leo, one more time, let our audience know the title of the movie, where they can find it, all that fun stuff.
Well, thank you guys, first off, for all you do and all your good work and all your support. Appreciate you very, very much. The film is Cabrini, and all tickets are available now for yourself, for others, if you want to help people who might not otherwise go see a film, which happened in Sound of Freedom, by the way. There was a bunch of people that paid it forward for others to see the film. And, you know, 98% of those, 99% of those tickets were actually redeemed. But yes, it's angel.com/Cabrini.
Awesome. Leo Severino, again, thank you so much. Needless to say, you are welcome back at the front line with Joe and Joe anytime, brother. This was an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you, fellas. Well, I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Absolutely. All right, we're penciling you in. Thank you all out there for joining us at the Veritas Catholic Radio Network, 1350 on your AM dial, 103.9 on your FM dial, spreading the truth of the Catholic faith to the New York City metropolitan area. Download the app. Share it with your friends. Share this interview with your friends. And if you're watching us on social media, X, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble in particular, please share it, like, subscribe, and do all that fun stuff. Help us to get these conversations out to a wider audience. Thank you once again. And remember, until the next time, that our conversation is your conversation, and that conversation is going on everywhere. We'll talk to you soon.